Joining us right now at PMP Network, you just heard the music from Baba Black Sheep and Magnum P.I. That means, of course, that Larry Minetti is here. And he has written a really fascinating book. It's called Aloha Magnum. He wrote it with Chip Silverman. And I actually read the whole thing, so you know that it was a good book because usually I do a little skimming. But I actually read the entire book. And Larry, it's very entertaining. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. That's a great compliment, Mark. I did a lot of work on that book.
Well, you've done a lot of stuff here. I mean, it's an amazing story. I can't possibly do it all in a 20-minute interview, but it's a fascinating book, and you've had quite the life.
Yeah, well, I look up at the heavens and say, gee, thanks, pal, for keeping me around. But I enjoyed every minute of it, and I would do it again.
Like, for instance, early in the book, when in a title in a chapter titled "From Chicago to Hollywood," my guest Larry Minetti was in his first year at Baba Black Sheep, and he was judging a Miss Magic Mountain beauty contest. And someone decided to fix him up on a date, and his choice actually finished second. Actually, no, he was a judge, and he was kind of talking all the contestants, and the one he picked finished second, and he began to date her, and her name, Michelle Pfeiffer. Yes, is that why we haven't seen you in any of the Kelly's TV shows lately?
That's probably, you're probably the only person that ever hit that right. As a matter of fact, I tried several times to get on Boston Legal, mm-hmm. and finally a little light bulb went off in my head, and I said, well, That's why I'm not on, because the guy that was the executive producer was a good friend of mine. I don't think he had the guts to tell me. But you know what? All's fair in love and war. So
exactly. But that's one of the first things I kind of like, whoa. You know, I guess the exciting part of your early career was, you know, finding out that you got the role of Boyle in Baba Black Sheep.
Yeah, that was a big deal for me. It was I was under contract at the time to Universal Studios, and you know, I was used to being shuttled around, pushing a broom in a barn one day and being a little lawyer on the next. But when this came about, Robert Conrad was the lead, and who was a friend of mine, and who was really responsible for making me go to from Chicago to L.A. And he said to me, "You got to get on this, kid." So I did everything I could politically and got in to read for it, and I read two or three times, and I was among 12 consummate actors, Jimmy Whitmore and John Larroquette. All those guys were just really, really, really educated for theater and for film, and I was basically a newcomer. So it was a struggle, but I finally made it in, and made my mark.
Yeah, and it's interesting because right before that, right before Baba Black Sheep, you were in a film called 2 Minute Warning, and because of circumstances, you ended up not being in the film 2 Minute Warning.
Right. Yeah, 2 Minute Warning held me back. That was a Charlton Heston movie, and I had a pretty good role in it, and I wasn't able to partake in the pilot. And it was also a Universal movie, so you know they just said, you know, what do you want from us? You know, you're working. Shut up. So it's.
Yeah.
It was frustrating, and I look back and I remember it exactly though. But it all worked out, you know, and it came out for the best. And Baba Black Sheep, by the way, is still one of the highlights of my life. It's probably one of the best of TV, and a terrific, terrific war film.
And of course, you got to work with Robert, who you were not only friends with but business partners with, and things like that as well.
Yeah, Bobby and I had a saloon called The Last Run up in Bear Valley, which was a ski resort.
There's a great story in here, and Elvis Presley said that you're a smart-ass son of a bitch.
Yeah, he said. Well. Remember, Red West, who eventually was on Baba Black Sheep, who played Sergeant Micklin, used to say, all right, you college boys. And he was Elvis's best friend and his bodyguard. But the reason is, and there's a good reason for this, because I'm not a smart-ass son of a bitch. I went to the concert, and after the concert was over, we went backstage. And I had just received a Pulsar watch that when you put it was an all black face. When you push a button, these red letters flashed across the screen. We got to remember, this was the early 70s, and they didn't have anything like that. And while I was sitting with Elvis, I just casually pushed the button, and he about went off his rocker and saw this thing. And he said, gotta have that, boy. And I said, he ain't gonna get it, because a very good friend of mine that ran the Stardust Hotel in Vegas gave it to me, and he was really good to me. I mean, he initially sponsored the money for me to come to Hollywood. So Elvis got upset and just blasted out of the green room, and that was it.
You have another interesting story in here too, which is could have been a tragic one, about ending up in a Mexican prison.
Yeah, that was scary. That was that was in Tijuana, and I think the guy's name was Eduardo Figueroa. Jeez, I guess that's part of being an actor. You got a good memory. But he was the head of this underground newspaper there, and I was with a fella. His name was Joe Testa, and he ran a big trucking company in Chicago. And he's like what you'd call, like, you know, a guy that you would think is a hoodlum. But he wasn't. He was a sweet guy.
Mm-hmm.
But we were in this hotel in Tijuana. It was ground level. And in the middle of the night, I noticed something moving, and I didn't know if it was a snake or what the hell it was. And next thing I know, it was this guy coming in the window, and I yelled out, Joe, there's a guy coming in the window. Well, he grabbed the lamp and crashed it over his head, and it happened to be a colonel in the Mexican army, and the guy was drunk and lost and trying to sneak in the window in what he thought was his hotel room so his wife wouldn't catch him. Anyway, we got incarcerated, and we were in the can. And this colonel didn't want to hear about anything because he had bandages on his head. So we got a hold of this Eduardo Figueroa guy, and he was responsible for getting us out. Otherwise, I might have been making Mexican jumping beans there.
Yeah, it's kind of a scary story.
Yeah, it was a fun story, though. It's fun to think about it now. It wasn't fun then.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, the book has so many names. You are a name dropper. I got to tell you that much.
Well, you know what? I'm not a name dropper, but I'll tell you what I did. I did this book because I didn't want to put any dirty laundry. I didn't want to have anybody say to me, you know, you put out a BS book and you held back. So, I mean, and quite frankly, the first book that I came out with, I had to recut again because Universal Studios and people went crazy. And they said, you can't put this book out. So, I mean, I'm not going to write another one, so the book you got is what you got. And this is a 5-star book, and anybody that doesn't like it, wire me. I'll send the money back, because it's, if you read it and you skimmed through books, you know. I mean, you could read this thing in one night.
It was, well, I read it in a couple nights. It was great. I didn't even want to put it down, actually, because it has so many people in here. I mean, you know, there's stories about Patrick Duffy, and there's a great one about brought Barry Sullivan, a great actor, slapping you across the face.
Yeah,
stories about Eddie Albert. One of my favorites is about Henry Winkler, when you tried to get Henry a job at Mannix, and he ended up on some show called Happy Days.
Yeah, well, it went like this. We were both in this room at Paramount Studios, and I was up for a two-hour Mannix with Mike Connors. And I looked at him, and he was a nice guy. I said, hey, what are you here for, pal? My name's Larry Minetti. And he said, my name's Hank Winkler. And he said, I'm supposed to read for this role that I'm this greasy guy with a leather jacket. And he says, you know, you'd probably be good for this. And I said, nah, nah. I said, I want to go up and I want to win this. I wanted to do this two-hour Mannix. Well, the windup was is I got the two-hour Mannix, and Henry got the Fonz from Happy Days, and we've been friends ever since. I haven't seen him for a while, but he was a nice man.
He is a nice man. He was a great guest on the show as well. And, of course, in 1975, you dated Connie Stevens.
Yeah, that was short-lived. She's a good friend of mine now.
Yes. She threw you
out
of her house.
You know, you got to understand, I dated Connie Stevens. You know, in 1975, Connie Stevens was drop-dead gorgeous, as so was Michelle Pfeiffer. And I was a little nervous, and I'm not a big saloon guy, so, I mean, I had a couple of drinks, and when I got to her house, I was, like, buzzed, and I fell asleep on her sofa, and she came down, and she threw me out.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's so many adventures in your life. There's one where you crashed a car on a scene, and the director was threatening to fire you.
Yeah, that was Virgil Vogel. I think that was Streets of San Francisco with Michael Douglas.
And, of course, you also had another interesting Streets of San Francisco experience where you were in a coffin, and they forgot about you.
God, I can't remember. You know, I forgot how good this book was. they put me in a coffin, and the coffin had a how do you put it? I was on the bottom of the coffin, and there was a corpse on top. And they called lunch, and the corpse jumped up and went to lunch. And nobody told me, and I was in this place with holes breathing. Finally, I'm screaming, hey, get me out of here. So finally, I kicked this thing, and the top went off, and I was in there by myself for 40 minutes.
Yeah. There's some Frank Sinatra stuff in here,
that's
Jimmy Cagney stuff.
I'm going to tell you a story with Frank Sinatra. Frank and I met when I was a kid. I was a caddy in Chicago. I'll make it quick because I don't want to bore anybody with the stories. But I got his number, and I was his caddy. Well, the following year, I was caddying at the same country club. And some other guy got his number, and I found out it was Sinatra, so I paid him to get the number and caddied for Frank. And at the end of the caddy, I said, Frank, maybe someday you'll see me in Hollywood. He said, yeah, kid, well, if you ever do, come over there, you know, look me up. Well, I did, and we became pals. So then fast forward, I get Magnum, and Frank is in Honolulu doing a concert, and he invites Selleck and I to dinner. So while at dinner, he's telling us about every episode in Magnum and everybody that's in it. So I said, Frank, why don't you do an episode? He says, kid, I thought you'd never ask me.
Mm. Yep, that was quite
That was just one story. The book is full of stories with Frank.
There is, and as well as his wife and your wife, too.
Yeah, Barbara Sinatra and Rocky the Parrot that I gave him. That lifelong ambition was to go across the floor while Frank was asleep and bite his toe.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, the character that you played on Magnum P.I., Rick, they started out with a different kind of premise on the way he was. He was a little more skittish, and you kind of built that character, along with the writers, into someone who was just, best friends with Magnum, and it had a great chemistry to it.
Yeah, well, that was a lot of work, I have to tell you, because the original script called for Rick to be a Bogart character. That's why his name was Rick. He called himself Rick after Casablanca, and he wore this white sport coat. And I mean, he mimicked Bogart. Well, I didn't like doing that, and it was very uncomfortable for me to do it. And the director and the pilot was giving me a hard time. He was really laying on me. And I did the best I could to do it. But you know, I was said, "Geez, I'm cursed." You know, you don't play Bogart. Give me a break. I mean, that's like playing Jesus, walking, you know, coming and getting on a cross. It's just terrible. It's sacrilegious. So anyway, the CBS didn't like it either, and they sent this memo and said, you know, tell Rick that we're not going to play it again. So they said, find another way. Well, the writers didn't know what to do, and I saw what I was used to was oust Rick, you know, because the show was new, so nobody would have missed me. So I said, look, guys, let me find another character. I'm going to play me. I'm going to play Larry Minetti.
Hmm.
And that's what I did, and it was difficult, but it worked. So.
Well, during this time, I find this all fascinating because, I'm reading I read the entire book, and one of the things that during the whole Magnum thing, you were married to Nancy.
Right.
And there were people from, like, tabloids, you know, going after her and saying, you know, I'm seeing him with women, and asking her if she was going to divorce you. And at one point, you said you made a deal with one of these guys to give him an exclusive story, and you told him about yourself and extraterrestrials in Hawaii.
Yeah, well, I did. You know, listen, the paparazzi and the media was a pain in the ass.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and the stories about me with the women is bull because. You know, I had my career was in full blown before Magnum, so I mean, and I wasn't stupid. If I wanted to be out there running around with a lot of dames, I wouldn't have gotten married. I mean, I had my fill. As you can read, when you read the book, you'll figure it out.
Uh-huh.
But in order to get them off, I said, look, you know, I'll give you a story, and one of them was me in the water with this 25-foot shark, and. They put it in, but I mean, they were brutal. I mean, I'm not complimentary with the press. They
yeah.
were terrible. They did anything to face anybody to make a buck for these crummy paper magazines.
You know what's something, Larry? I got to tell you. You know, I'm reading all this stuff, and your wife, by the way, Nancy, beautiful, beautiful woman.
Thank you. Thank
and
you.
Your son Lorenzo was born around that time. I think it's worse now with the TMZs and all these different tabloid media that's added to the actual tabloids. Now,
well,
I mean, they follow everybody, even the politicians.
Yeah, I've had problems with them. I had problems with them not too long ago. Selleck and I and Robert Wagner and Dennis Farina walked out of a restaurant. I mean, they literally, you couldn't breathe, and they were sticking cameras in your face. You know, enough's enough. And the thing is that, you know, this country's made. It's freedom of the press. I understand it. But, you know, and they helped us make it when we started out. But, you know, they go overboard. You see these guys, and they're just terrible. They're and I don't think they're Americans. I'm not going to get into that. But.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
you know, one of the things that I love to talk about is Tom Selleck, because you have incredible things to say about him. The guy was, you know, a really good-looking guy that all the women loved, and I guess the guys liked him as well. But I remember at one point in the book you had mentioned that he had joked on set that, you know, one of these days he was going to buy you guys all a Porsche, and he ended up giving you guys 928s.
Yeah, he did. It was 19. God, it seems like a lifetime ago, but it was 1986, and I was home, and the doorbell rang, and I opened the door, and this guy, I didn't know if he was going to rob me or what he was. I just opened the door. I said, yeah, what's up? And he said, I have a special delivery for you. Well, he didn't have anything in his hand, so I figured, okay, next thing he's going to come is a gun. And he said, look. And I looked out there, and there's this black Porsche. And I said, so? And he said, it's a gift from Mr. Selleck. Congratulations. Well, I almost keeled over.
That's unbelievable.
A gold Rolex too. I mean, he gave us a lot of gifts.
Guy's a very generous guy. He was very successful, and he was very generous with the people who made him successful.
Exactly.
Which is a smart thing to do. A lot of people are not like that, unfortunately, because their egos get in the way. But there's a lot of stories in here about you, and you know the previous term that I mentioned before from someone else was wise ass. And well, you got yourself in all kinds of, you got thrown out of a condo association, you got thrown out of hotels, you're a wise guy. You had a good time.
I was, let me tell you this, I was mischievous, I was respectful, I wasn't a smart ass.
Okay.
I wasn't the kind of guy that you would dislike.
No, you're actually pretty, they're funny stories.
Would have had fun with me.
Yeah. Now, you're a party animal, I guess.
I don't do that anymore. I behave.
Well, we all do it. As when we get to a certain age, we stop behaving. But I had my own days like that,
remember,
too.
I mean, I was a mischievous kid. My father put me in a military school, and they used to wake us up at 6 in the morning, so I stole the bugle and hung it out my window on a rope. I mean, it's...
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. You know, I didn't mean wise ass is a bad thing either. I mean, it's not a good, you know. But in the middle of Magnum PI, you did something a little interesting, I thought. You decided that you wanted to be a singer.
Yeah, well, You know, I always wanted to be a singer. I think everybody has, oh, has great feelings to be either a singer or a movie star. So it was more to be a singer than it was to be an actor. And I tried it, and when I was doing Magnum, because I figured here's the best shot because, you know, the show was white hot, and I was pretty hot. And I said, you know, see if you can get me a gig. And I went to singing school, and I'm laughing about it. You have no idea the traumas and tribulations. But I went to singing school, and I got a gig, and it was the Fremont Hotel. And because I was under contract to Universal Studios, I had to have an executive go with me. So I had my opening night, and I roll up, and there's up in big lights, or, you know, starring Larry Minetti. And I went, wow, you know, and I walked in with my little suitcase. And they said, well, follow us, Mr. Minetti, and we'll show you the showroom. So I walked into the showroom, and there was Freddie Fender standing there on the stage singing with nine people in the audience. And I said, if Freddie Fender can only get nine people, I'm dead. I turned around, and this guy said, Mr. Minetti, where are you going? I said, Beverly Hills. I jumped in a cab and split, and they sued me for $88,000.
I love that story. That's a great one. But the thing I thought was really kind of cool was that you hooked up with Jimmy Halva for a little while, and he was a guy that was well known. He was the guy who wrote Kind of a Drag, which the Buckinghams had a huge hit out of.
Well, he wrote all my music. You know, I should one day sell this thing or give it away or something. There's like eight songs that I sang that I don't think I could do again. But he was the writer.
I bet you that you
he
should
wrote
do
it.
You
know? And Ron Douglas wrote it, who's also of fame from the 50s.
Yeah.
And they wrote all this, and they were, like, really in demand. I mean, Kenny Rogers wanted the stuff, and pretty neat time of my life. I enjoyed it, but I realized that singing wasn't for me.
Well, I think that, you know, you probably were a lot better than a guy like William Shatner, who released a few.
Yeah, well,
I don't know if you've heard of his stuff.
I met Bill Shatner. He seems nice, you know. But listen, this is a business, you know. You're on ball bearings, you know, all the time, and
yeah.
You can't be have soft skin. You got to have a little bit of a callus because you're going to get knocked around.
That's true.
And you know, yeah. You live and learn. I mean, believe me, I went through a lot of sad moments when I went through this. And this is a business, you know, of rejection. So.
Yeah. Any chance, by the way, of a reunion for the Magnum PI group?
We desperately want to do the reunion. I want everybody to know that. I spoke to Selleck yesterday again, and I think he's tired of hearing me bellyache about it. But the real truth is that Universal Studios has been bought and sold four times. General Electric had it. Comstock has it now. And what happens is as soon as there's some interest, it falls through the cracks, and these birds sell the studio. So if people really want it, they should start writing over there. The guy's name is Brian Roberts. He's the head of the studio. I'll get killed for saying this, but I don't care. Write Brian Roberts and say, do the Magnum movie. We're in 59 countries. They would really make a lot of money, but it would make everybody happy.
I think you're right. They would. And
yeah.
One of the things that fascinates me in the book, Larry, is the some of the guest stars that were on Magnum PI. Carol Burnett, Ernest Borgnine, and June Lockhart and her daughter Anne, who we had on the show, Carol Channing, Betty White, Dennis Weaver, all these folks. Yeah, exactly. And I love the stories. And one of the things about this book, folks, that you're going to really enjoy is if you're really Magnum PI fan, every episode's recounted in here, and some of the little things about the people who are in it are in here too. It's a very unique book in terms like that. There are, you know, there's books like that about Twilight Zone and some of these other shows, but I haven't seen anything like that about Magnum PI out there. So it's kind of a cool thing to read.
Yeah, thank you. I got to give credit to Chip Silverman, who's now gone, who wrote this with me. That was his idea, and it was the labor of love of his. And the recipes that are in there are real, authentic recipes that, you know, that I cooked and I got for my family, for my mother, and that I cooked for Carol Burnett, Sinatra, Borgnine. I still cook them, you know. Not like Boston guys, but, you know.
Hey. You know, talking about the Boston guys and stuff like that, you know, we did get an email from one person who was not happy with you. A guy named Kenny Rogers says you owe him $262.50.
That's a funny. That's That's a story I'll never forget, because Kenny Rogers, I drove from Chicago, and I drove in an XKE D12 with no money, and I had this car, and I mean, the car cost more than my apartment. And Kenny calls me, and he says, hey, listen, I need your car. I want to drive to Vegas. And he had a black Lincoln Continental. It was new at that time in the 70s. With the telephone in it. Well, they didn't have phones then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, telephone then was, I mean, you click it and you wait till the operator gets on. It was really a big deal. Only the elite had them. And I said, oh, okay. So he switched cars with me, and some friends came in from Chicago. Well, we had a ball for like a week, and the phone bill was like outrageous. And he called me, and he said, you know, you better pay me for my phone bill. Well, I didn't have any money. I wasn't on a series. I mean, I was just, you know, walking around with two dimes in my pocket trying to make a success out of myself. Well, as time went on, Selleck and I went to a Kenny Rogers concert, and there were thousands of people there, and Selleck and I were in front. And I told Tom, you know, I know Kenny Rogers. Ah, yeah, bull, you know. So he says, ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce two special guests. Well, he introduces Tom Selleck. And then he says, and Larry Minetti, stand up. And I stand up, and he says, and Larry Minetti still owes me $262 for a phone bill that he never paid. You're a stiff. That was a moment of my life that I won't forget. But I did pay it. I sent him that amount plus a gorgeous silk shirt, so I'm sure we're square.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, you got some great stories here about one of them about Robert Wagner, kind of a classy guy, a very expensive kind of guy, huh?
RJ, who is just 80 years old and has remained a very, very close friend of mine for years, and he's just a sweet, sweet man. And I knew him, you know, I mean, he's married now to Jill St. John, who's also a great lady, but I knew him when he was married to Natalie, and we used to hang out. We hung out a couple of nights at Michelle's restaurant in Honolulu. I remember I made Natalie Wood a hot fudge sundae and made one with him, and I put flies and bugs on top of it and put whipped cream on it. That was nuts. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but that was the last time you saw Natalie Wood, too.
That was the last time I saw her. Last thing I heard, yeah, next yeah. thing I heard was gone.
Yeah, I'm just laughing at one of the stories here where you bought a bottle, Wagner drank a bottle, and When they came back to get the money from you, because you had said you were going to buy, it was a little bit more than you could afford at the time.
Right. Well, that was that Glenn Larson?
No, that was.
Oh, that was Glenn. That was Glenn. There was a producer named Glenn Larson. Not there was. I mean, he's still very active, and he produced Galactica and Takes a Thief and Switch and BJ and the Bear. I mean, I can go on and on. Tons of stuff. So he was in a restaurant. And I was desperately trying to get him to notice me because he was at Universal Studios. So I told the waiter, I said, whatever he's drinking, give it to him. He said, well, he's drinking Chateau Lafite. Well, I didn't know what Chateau Lafite was. I mean, Chateau Lafite could have been a car or a suit. I said, yeah, give it to him. Mm-hmm. So he gave it to him. And he looked up, he nodded to me, and the next thing I know, I get a bill, and I couldn't pay it. And I didn't want him to know. It was a nightmare.
Yeah, it can be like that. Tell us a little bit about your thoughts about Hawaii. And do you go back there at all?
Well, I haven't been back there, but they're doing a big push on Hawaii now. And I sent a message to the governor saying that if you wanted me to be a part of your push, you know, because Magnum is Hawaii, so I'd be happy to do it. But I haven't been there for quite a while. I do miss it.
Yeah,
it's a wonderful place. After 9 years, I was kind of it was kind of nice to get away for a while. It's as close to heaven as you'll ever get, folks, if you go there. And once you go there, you're hooked. You want to go back. It's just beautiful. It's just something you can't explain. And I feel lucky that, you know, I got up for work for 9 years and ate and drank and slept and played tennis and had a good time there.
I thought another funny part of the book was the part about the Ferrari. Everybody, of course, associates the Magnum P.I. show with the red Ferrari that Tom drove in it. And in 1984, the studio replaced the original, and you bought the old one and took it back and had a very interesting adventure with it.
Well, my favorite car is the Maserati. So,
yeah.
And Maserati's made by Ferrari. But the Ferrari And I don't know, I just had a hard time with Ferrari. It started off, I bought the car from the show. Bob Bondurant, who was a famous race driver, had a school called Bondurant's Driving School. And I said, okay, I'm going to go there. So TV Guide said, well, look, we want to follow you around. So the long and the short of it is Bondurant came here to the house. He stayed as my guest. And the next day, we get in the Ferrari. I was going to drive it up to Fresno to the track and enter it in the school. I was going to drive the Ferrari. Well, I put the key in it, and it didn't start. That was number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, they gave me a Porsche. And then when I got back, I took the Ferrari, got it fixed, and I was on the freeway, and it broke down at 4:30 in the afternoon, height of traffic. I'm standing in the middle of the freeway, and a truck goes by. The guy hangs out, and he says, hey, Rick, why don't you call Magnum and ask for a ride? Well, it was embarrassing. Then the paint spidered. I said, time to go.
Yeah, it wasn't exactly one. There's so many great stories in the book. We're obviously not going to get them all. But one of them I wanted to mention, I thought was great, was that your son loved animals, and you decided one year to bring an elephant named Ty to the house.
Yeah.
That's a pretty funny story.
Yeah, that's an Indian elephant. That elephant's still on television.
Really?
And I brought the elephant to the house. But, you know, who knows? I mean, I'm from Chicago. I mean, an elephant to me was somebody that ate too much. This was a real elephant, and it backed up. I had gorgeous bay windows. It backed up right to the frickin' windows. So it almost went in my living room.
Yeah, well, actually, according to this thing, it kind of did go in your living room a little bit.
Well, it did. I don't want to get into that.
Broke part of the house down, actually.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, listen, we should tell everybody where to get the book.
Oh, no, we can't tell them that, because then they'll find it, and then they'll know it like me.
Then they'll find it, and they'll share the treasure.
Yeah, exactly. But, of course, it's not that difficult to go to LarryMannetti.com.
No.
But it's spelled M-A-N-E-T-T-I, LarryMannetti.com. And then they can get a copy of the book. And it's only $14.95, which is a very good price.
Pardon me?
I said it's only $14.95. It's cheap. How can you get that much fun for $14.95?
I kept it. Listen, I did everything right just so everybody would be happy, because I shared with you a glory, and I want you to share some of the thoughts and fun times that we had. So.
And there's a great cooking story in here, too. I won't even talk about it, but it's a great cooking story.
Yeah, we don't want to. You're giving the whole book away.
Yeah, no, there's some just too many funny things in here, and people are going to really enjoy it. And there's great pictures. And again, an episode guide to let you know a little bit of the background of all the episodes.
You know, I had a telephone call last week that Sony Pictures are interested in making this into a movie.
Really?
Into a movie. Yeah, obviously. I mean, it's not going to be me in a movie, but it'll be some young guy portraying Larry Minetti.
That'll be cool. And there'll
like,
be somebody.
Kind of like a Ferris Bueller Day Off movie.
Yeah, and someone else can portray Tom, too.
Yeah, well, someone else will portray everybody.
Yeah.
Because it goes back to 1970, so.
Yeah. Maybe you can play a dad.
Maybe I could be the elephant trainer.
Well, I think
thank you so much.
It's a great book, Larry. I really enjoyed it, and I enjoyed talking to you, and wish you a lot of luck with it.
Oh, thank you, and say hello to everybody in Boston, my favorite pizza joint.
There you go. All right, take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.